And this is what family's like, you know? Sometimes we're like that child that says, "Ah, I've had enough of this." And other times we just say, "I can't get enough." Anyway, I'm going to waffle, and that's not helpful for the rest of you, because you don't need to listen to me doing that. What we really want to do is to get on with the sermon, isn't it? And I'm going to disappoint you today, because you're not going to get a sermon in the way that we might normally expect it to be. I went away to a conference a while ago, and I saw somebody do something extremely well. And as I was preparing for this morning's Sunday, I thought, oh, I could learn from what I saw demonstrated so well. Because, you know, we're all learners, aren't we? None of us have got it. None of us are perfect. None of us can say we've arrived. And so this morning, I want to learn a new way of us interacting with Scripture. And I trust, at least for the majority of us, we'll kind of be okay with it. As you've already so beautifully been shown, we're starting a new series. Ruth's called it The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. And we're going to look at three Bible characters. We're going to look at Gideon, and we're going to look at Deborah. But this morning, we're looking at Samson. And we're going to learn how our extraordinary God transformed the lives of ordinary people to bring about his purposes and his work in a given season in the lives of the people of their day. So just a tiny bit of background before we launch into the story. And to give you a heads up, I'm going to get you to tell us the story rather than me read all of the chapters that Samson's story is found in. The background to this season in the life of the Israelites is that they were worshipping idols that belonged to their enemies, and God handed them over to enemy oppression. But even though he handed them over, he didn't abandon them. In Samson's day, who can tell me the name of the enemy? The Philistines. If we're going to teach each other, we're going to have to speak boldly and confidently so we don't have a nice little Baptist whisper. All right? So if you know the answer or you think you've got something to say, can I encourage you to share it with everyone? You're absolutely right. The enemy in Samson's day were the Philistines. The Philistines particularly worshipped a god called Dagon, which was made in the form of a fish's head on a man's body. And the Philistines had robbed the Israelites of their weapons so they couldn't fight. And every harvest time, the Philistines would swoop in and take all the crops. And they'd bring in their goats and their other animals, and they would eat up all the good land. And so the Israelites were left really defenseless and powerless and extremely hungry. And so they cried out to God in prayer, and God gave them Samson. As I say, his story is found over a number of chapters in the book of Judges, chapters 13 to 16. So rather than me read all of those chapters, we're going to piece the story together from our memories. And if we don't know this story, don't worry. Just enjoy listening to other people tell it. So as we think of Samson, what are some of the things that come to mind? What is Samson perhaps most famous for?
Tate and Lyle, Gold and Syrup.
Sorry?
Tate and Lyle, Gold and Syrup.
I love that. Brilliant. So he is famous for Tate and Lyle, Gold and Syrup. Excellent. Now what's behind that kind of sugary bit? Sorry?
The lion.
The lion. Okay. Now, what's the story about the lion? Some of you are thinking, isn't that Daniel? No, there's a lion in Samson's story as well. Judy? Samson killed a lion. He tore it apart as though it were nothing. It's quite gruesome to read. Okay, so we've got Samson killing a lion, but I don't get the honey or the sweet or the syrup. Where does that fit in?
Bees built
a nest in the carcass of the lion that Samson killed. That's absolutely right. And so we've got our Tate and Lyle syrup. What is so significant in Samson's story about the bees building their nest in the carcass?
Quote is, out of the strong came forth sweetness.
Absolutely. So there was a riddle, wasn't there, that Samson gave to a bunch of blokes, out of the sweetness, out of the strong came the sweetness. Thank you. I've got all sorts of notes up here, but I'm going to ad lib, so you're going to have to keep me on the straight and narrow. Now, that was a really significant riddle. Can we remember which bunch of blokes were given that riddle and how that fits into Samson's story? That's right. I didn't see who. Was that you, Stan, that said that? Thank you. Yes, they were guests at a wedding. Whose wedding were they at? Whose wedding were they at? Someone's going, what a silly question. Samson's, of course. That's absolutely right. It was Samson's wedding. And Samson was marrying... Actually, it wasn't Samson's wedding to Delilah. You see, Samson was married more than once. Okay? Samson was married to somebody different. So this was at his first wife's wedding. Anybody got an idea as to the town that this lady came from, this woman came from? Timnah, that's absolutely right. And can anybody tell me anything significant about Timnah? Oh, it's not a trick question. I'm just trying to put a bit of geography into our story. Sorry? They enjoyed wine, and they probably enjoyed wine because they were a Philistine town. So Timnah was one of the Philistine towns. And what might that tell us about Samson's first wife? She was a Philistine woman. That's absolutely right. And so we have this wedding, and we have this riddle that was given to, in effect, the blokes that might well have been part of Samson's stag party, if we were to put it into kind of everyday language, what we would see today. So we've got this riddle that was given to these men out of the strong... I'm going to keep getting it wrong, aren't I? So, yes, I've got the complete riddle written down here. And I'm going to give it to you completely if I can find it. And if I can't, I won't. Out of the eater, something sweet. And out of the strong, something sweet. Brilliant. For some reason, I didn't write that down on my notes, which was very unhelpful. I'm working from three sets of notes here. So, we have this riddle. It was given to these men. Can you give me a bit of background to what was going on at that wedding? And why Samson perhaps gave that riddle to these friends?
Gift, I think, a bow or something, if they had the answer right.
You're absolutely in the right direction, Stan. It was a bet. I mean, isn't that what blokes do together? I bet you can't get this. No, Tim's saying, I don't do that at all. It's what some blokes do when they get together, and women too. When you get groups of people and they're a bit kind of, you know, I bet you can't solve this mystery. I bet you can't solve this riddle. But I tell you, if you do, I'm going to give you 30 outfits. It was 30 outfits. So did these men get the answer to the riddle? Tim's shaking his head. He's saying no. They couldn't work it out. It was too complicated for them. So what did these men do? They threatened his wife. They did. They threatened to burn his wife. They're not particularly pleasant people. They threatened to burn his wife. So what did his wife do? Yeah, she went to Samson and she said, Samson, if you really loved me, if you really loved me, you would tell me the answer to this riddle. And of course a man at his wedding loves his wife. And so he told her the answer. And it's interesting because her loyalty was for her own safety, which we understand, and perhaps to her own people. And so she told them the answer to the riddle. And did Samson go, oh, that's all right, it was just a bit of a joke? Exactly. He didn't just let it go. It wasn't a joke. It was as though it were a badge of honour for him. And so you're absolutely right. He got his 30 outfits, but he got them from 30 slaughtered Philistine people. It's quite interesting, isn't it? Samson was quite a challenging character to us. So he then stormed off. Okay? He stormed off back to his own family. But a little later, he went back to do what a husband would do and be with his wife. What did he discover when he got back to that marital home? Well, she had gone off with someone else, but actually her father had given her to someone else, because that was kind of the custom of the day. A woman would be given by the father. Because he'd assumed that Samson had abandoned his daughter. So what did Samson do? Did he go, oh, that's all right, plenty more fish in the sea? That's right. And he did a bit more than 12. He caught 300. He caught 300 foxes. I mean, poor foxes. Tied their tails together, put a lump of wood through them, and set fire to them. And they ran through. Some of you are thinking, my word, is all of this in the Old Testament? No wonder it takes so many chapters to tell Samson's story. And so he destroyed all of their crops by setting fire to them. And I don't know that they ate roast fox that night. The Philistines, what did they do? Do you think they went, oh dear, well that's tit for tat, we've destroyed their crops, we'll just let it go? What do you think the Philistines did? Well, they didn't take it lying down, did they? So they went off, they killed the father, and they killed his wife. So that was a really sad end, but Samson wasn't a man that would take anything lying down. So he retaliated and killed all of the people that had... What a pattern. What a pattern we see going on here. What kind of end comes to that kind of pattern? If we had somebody in our community that every time something happened, they went off and antagonized, and then there was retribution. Just think of gangs, not the kind of gangs that we saw in that wonderful video clip, perhaps the kind of gangs that we hear about. At some point, a community will say, enough is enough, won't they? And that's exactly what happened with Samson. The Philistines went to the Israelites and or the Judeans, and they said, you know, we need to deal with this. And so Samson was handed over to the Philistines. What happened then when Samson was handed over to the Philistines? Do you remember what happened in the story then? He hadn't remarried at that point. He was still, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe up until this point in the story, we saw a lot of Samson's strength coming out of anger. But we read the Spirit of God came on him, and he was able to break the ropes that were binding him as though really they were pieces of cotton. And then he attacked the people that he was being handed over to. He picked up a jawbone of a donkey, and he killed about 1,000 Philistines with it. You can see now why we've called this the good and the bad and the ugly. There is some gruesome stuff in this story. But after that event, there was one of Samson's finest moments. And I wonder whether we're familiar with this little bit in his story. After he slaughtered all these people, how did Samson feel? Not surprisingly, he'd worked really hard, and he was thirsty. He was really thirsty, and he was vulnerable, and he was weak. And he said to God, Lord, you've helped me win a battle over a whole army. Please don't let me die of thirst now. These heathen Philistines will carry off my dead body. And God sent water gushing out of a rock, and that restored his strength. And out of that season, perhaps Samson, seeing how wonderfully God answered his prayer, Samson was the leader of Israel for about 20 years, even though the Philistines were still the rulers. We don't quite know exactly what went on in those years, but what we do know is that Samson ended up in the city of Gaza, and like many cities, that had a great big wall around it. And the Philistines found out that he was in Gaza. He was actually visiting the home of a prostitute, and the Philistines locked all the gates. They closed the city up, and they thought in the morning, great, we've got him. Do we know what Samson did? Can we remember what Samson did? Some of these bits are less familiar in Samson's story, aren't they? Absolutely. Yeah, they were all waiting till the morning to attack. But Samson got up in the middle of the night. He went out to the city walls, and he just lifted up these huge city gates. If you've been to the British History Museum, you will see some of the huge kind of city gates there, and he lifted these huge city gates, and he dumped them on the top of the hill not far from a city of Hebron, So he took them and he carried them and he said, there we are, that's what I'm going to do with your little picket fence. So again, his strength was coming out. So perhaps in Samson's history, we then move into his new relationship with Delilah. Okay. What can you tell me about his relationship with Delilah?
She was a hairdresser.
Do you know, I've got a very funny story. We back in Tunbridge, Paul used to have really long hair. Some of you maybe didn't know that. And our youth minister at the time did a service on Samson and Delilah. We had to warn Jess. Somewhere up in our loft, we've got this lovely picture of Jess showing Daddy with his hair being cut off, because I was invited halfway through this story to get up onto the platform and snip his ponytail off. We had a little bit of a wager there, in as much that we said, how much will people donate for charity if I actually do the job? And we raised loads of money for a charity. But anyway, that's beside the point. Yeah, she was a hairdresser. But apart from being a hairdresser, what else can we say about Delilah? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. She was a plant. She was somebody to discover his strength, because he was such a threat to the Philistines. But I think where you started, Stan, was really important. Samson really loved her. He fell in love with this woman. And so what happened in this story that perhaps is more familiar? She manipulated him, that's right. So she wanted to know the secret to his strength. And she used her feminine wiles, didn't she, to try and get to the root of this strength that he had. How did Samson play that out? Sorry? No, to begin with, he was strong, wasn't he? To begin with, he didn't tell her the truth. Yeah, she wore him down.
She nagged him.
She nagged him until he was tired to death. You know, is there anything in the story that is applicable to us today? We might not go and slaughter 1,000 people with the jawbone of an ass, but are we starting to see ourselves maybe in this story, just a little bit? She nagged him and nagged him and nagged him. And then she said something very significant. Yeah. It was exactly the same as the other one. She said, you're making a fool of me, but if you really loved me, if you really loved me, you would tell me. And it's interesting, isn't it? Samson seems to have learned something of being resistant, and yet he, like us all, has his vulnerable and his weak spots where that seems to get him a second time. And so Samson broke, didn't he? He said where the secret of his strength came from. Now, one of the things that we before we do that, so what happened after his hair was cut off.
Before his hair was cut off, hmm. Education, certain very false reasons of a source of strength.
That's right. Absolutely. All the time. I'm going to sort these Philistines out. But he didn't realize that God had left him because his hair had been cut. So when he jumped up to deal with them, he found that he was just like an ordinary man with an ordinary man's strength. And he was overpowered and he was taken captive. Was he treated nicely in prison? No. What happened in prison? They gouged his eyes out. Yeah. How disgusting and revolting is that? Did God abandon him in prison? Absolutely. So something natural started to happen. His hair started to grow back. And I think when we know the end of the story, we see something of God in that prison place as his hair grew back. Maybe that was symbolic of something else. Maybe of something else that was going on in that prison cell. And we read in the Bible that there was a big celebration day for the Feast of Dagon, and he was brought out as the entertainment. Ha! Samson, this big strong man, has to be led out because he can't see where he's going. He has to be led into this temple. And what does Samson do? He stands there and he cries out to God one more time. Give me strength. You know, that's a good prayer for each and every one of us to pray every day. God, give me strength. And we're often asking for inner strength, but actually for Samson, he was asking for physical strength. And we're told he puts his arms on the pillars and he pushes the pillars and the temple falls down, and he kills even more Philistines than he ever had before. And the outcome was that this terrified the Philistines, and it was years before they tried to rule over the Israelites again. And he just said, "Let me die with the Philistines." They were his final words. Interesting, he'd aligned himself so often with the Philistines throughout his life. He died with them, but actually he did what it was he was called to do. And in all of our story of Samson, we haven't talked about his beginning. We haven't talked about his birth. And I wonder whether any of us can piece together his beginning story. And again, it may not be quite so well known to us. Absolutely. He was a bit like Samuel in as much that his mother was barren. And so this birth, or this conception, was quite a miraculous conception. And did this conception just happen, or did she get an idea that she was going to become a mum? She had an angel visit and was told that she would become a mum. And did the angel say anything about Samson, about this boy that she was going to have? That's right. The angel said he is to live like a Nazarite. And a Nazarite was somebody that took a vow to set themselves apart and to live for God. And there were specific things that a Nazarite was supposed to do or not do. They were supposed to abstain from wine and anything alcoholic, including wine vinegar. And they were to abstain from grape juice and eating grapes, either fresh or dried. They were not allowed to cut their haircuts. And they weren't to go anywhere near a dead body, even if it were a member of their family. And so as we think of what it was that Samson was born to do, we see that throughout his life, he betrayed that calling. He married a Philistine woman twice. He didn't keep himself set apart and holy for God. When he killed that lion, he was in a vineyard. It suggests that he would have eaten grapes. He was in a place that would have been seen as a forbidden place for a Nazarite to go. And when he killed that lion, which was on his way to visiting the woman that would become his first wife, he was returning down that journey and went to look at the carcass. And that was when he found the honey. And what is a carcass? It's a dead body. And so in this early part of his life, we see him betraying his Nazarite vow because he didn't allow himself to be set apart from God. He was in a vineyard where he wasn't supposed to be. And he ate something out of a carcass. Interestingly, he shared some of it with his family, although he didn't tell them where it had come from. All the way through Samson's life, we see him, if you like, letting God down. He was a man who was born into a place of promise, but he never quite managed to live up to it until perhaps that final moment where he was prepared to give his life to be the deliverer of the Israelite people, which is what the angel said that he would be. So in Samson, we see a man who never quite achieved all that he could achieve. But in Samson, does he not remind us of another story that we read in the Bible? Doesn't he remind us of the story of Christ? A man who was also born, miraculously conceived, announced by an angel, told that he would be a deliverer, not for the Israelites, but for the whole of the world. In Samson, we see a man, but he is an indication of who was to come. Jesus, if you like, is the true Samson, the deliverer of the world. Samson is quite a reassuring character, I think, for lots of us, because we think, well, I messed up. I get it wrong. I've been called to live a life that is pleasing to Jesus, and yet I don't live as though I'm set apart. I don't live the way I know I should. I break the Ten Commandments and all sorts of other things in between. Samson is very reassuring because we know that we've got the same character imperfections and the same limitations in the way in which we live out our faith. And I think his story is reassuring because we see ourselves in him. But it is reassuring in as much that we see that God didn't abandon him. In the book of Hebrews, there is a list of heroes of the faith. We might not expect to see his name yet there, and yet it is. And you know, when we mess up, and when we get it wrong, and we live lives like Samson, and we see ourselves in him, because of Jesus, because of what Jesus has done, he didn't die a broken man, perhaps like Samson. He died victorious, and he died to live with us and within us, to change the way God sees us. And so we see ourselves in Samson. We see the mess ups and we see the mistakes we make. We see the way that our ego and our emotions and our gifts that God has given us, but we still use them for our own benefit. We see that in ourselves, and some of us might even see us as that nagging wife. The amazing thing is that God hasn't just promised not to abandon us or forget us, as we see in Samson. Because of Jesus, the way God sees us is completely different. So we see Samson in us. Mistakes, errors, I wish I could do it a different way. God looks on us and he sees Christ. He sees Christ in us. He sees us made right. He knows our imperfections and he knows our flaws. And he knows our character weaknesses. And he knows that maybe what we do on a Sunday doesn't reflect what we do in the 6 days that have gone before or the 6 days that will follow after. But when God looks on us, he sees us as Christ. And so this morning, as we have thought about the story of Samson, and we've thought about his imperfection, and we've thought about his limitations, we've glossed over some of the gruesome, and we have perhaps encouraged some of the heroic, we remember that Jesus is the true and the better Samson, and it is like Jesus that we are being called to be. The Philistines were terrified of Samson. The demons were afraid of Jesus. Samson caused fear because he was a fiery, fighting, violent man, controlled by his emotions and his urges. Jesus was peaceful. Even when he was brought to his trial, he was painfully abused, the Bible tells us, but he did not complain. He was silent like a lamb being led to the butcher, as quiet as a sheep having its wool cut off, as Isaiah writes. Jesus' strength and Jesus' power and Jesus' authority came, not because he was controlled by the inner man, but he was controlled by the Spirit of God that lived within him. And just as Jesus lived that way, he invites us to live that way too. To recognize our character flaws and our imperfections, but not to live in them, not to live with them, but to surrender them and to ask Jesus' Spirit to come in and to have our lives controlled by the nature of Jesus, not by our inner being. So we're going to conclude this time together by singing a song that allows us to surrender those things that are more Samson-like than Christ-like, and for us to ask Jesus to transform us into greater Christ-likeness, so that our inner Samson-like nature will die but the nature of Christ will grow and develop and be alive.